Hey, it's Melissa from Melissa in the Morning on WICC 600, and thanks for checking out the podcast right here. If you want, you can always subscribe, share, and like it. Hope to see you guys soon. Thanks. I want to welcome back Julie Balke, who is our career strategist on The Morning Show. Good morning, Julie. How are you?
Good morning, Melissa. I'm great.
I'm so glad you're here this morning. So I'm so glad you also brought up a topic that just so happened to have been in my news last week. So we're going to get to that in just one second, which is quiet quitting. It's like this newfound term that I'm hearing all the time. And I'm like, oh, we should talk more about that. But first, I also wanted to talk about layoffs. We have seen, especially since the beginning of the pandemic, look, we even went through it here at Connoisseur. We had a massive layoff shortly after the pandemic got started in 2020. And so the question this morning is, how do you prepare yourself for a potential layoff? And I know that probably sounds very negative, but really it's just a realistic, I'd say, a journey, I would say, for some people that we don't a lot of the time expect to happen, but it happens, unfortunately. So how do you tell your clients, like, what do you tell them to prepare for a layoff?
So the last several years, and I'm going to say, you know, since the recession of 2008, and I even go back into the 90s, prior to that, there was at least this false sense of security of companies, the companies were loyal to you. And we now know that that is not only true, but it was really never true. And so my mantra to our clients is, your company wants you until the day they don't. And you have to act accordingly. At any time, so and one of the things that 2008 taught us was, when there's a layoff, it's not just people who are, you know, kind of mediocre performers. Some of the top performers in roles at companies and professions were mm-hmm. let go.
Yeah.
And so there's, you know, unless you have not been paying attention, there should be just at least a kernel of understanding that your company can live without you. And you need to always be prepared to go. And that go can come from a couple different places. It can come from, I'm not happy here anymore. And so I need to find something that's a better fit for me and what I want out of my career. Or it could be the organization having a layoff, you know, maybe across the board layoff, or even, you know, your company saying, we're going to outsource your role. We're going to outsource your department. And any of those things can cause you to lose your job. And you know, for the first 10 years that I was in the career space, I sat across the table from countless people who've been let go, who swore it would never happen to them. Mm-hmm. And so to everybody listening, it can happen to you. And my question is always, what would you do if you went to work today and they told you you don't need to come back tomorrow? Are you ready? And so ready means lots of different things. First of all, the old basic stuff, you know, do you have an up-to-date resume that showcases your skills and accomplishments?
How do you know if it's updated? Like, I know what you mean, like, oh, have you touched it since college? But, you know, how often should you be updating? Well, you'd be surprised, Julie. I mean, I have friends who are like, oh, I did this my senior year. I'm like, you're 35. What do you mean updated? Like, how often should you be updating your resume?
You should always have your current job on there. Now, think about it. So let's say you have these people who have not done a resume for 20 years. If they sat down today to try to do a resume, they would be so lost, because we don't do a good job of keeping track of what our responsibilities and accomplishments were. So if every time you have an accomplishment at work, or you finish a project that you're proud of, or you get a new skill, you should be adding that to your resume. At the very least, keep a file somewhere with all of your accomplishments and responsibilities on it. Because imagine trying to sit there tomorrow and create it from scratch. It's so frustrating.
That sounds terrible.
When you have your resume, right. You know, when you have your resume, all your most current stuff and your most impressive accomplishments and responsibilities on your resume, it's easy to begin a job search. And then the same goes for your LinkedIn profile. You must be on LinkedIn. If you are in a professional or semi-professional job, it's a great idea to be there, because that's how people are finding people to hire. And that's how you can stay in a job search, stay active and available all the time, because your profile is out there. The next, you know, one of the, and this is one of those things that's really hard to do in the moment, but the more indispensable you are in your job at work, the less likely you are to be on the list. When the cutting starts, it starts with people that companies are very confident they can live without. And as I said, my experience is most people overestimate their indispensability.
Mm.
And so, you know, even the best, even if you're sure that that it would not go well without you, look around and say, you know, if my company is going to go through a layoff, and there's such a high number of companies that are either going to go through that or are going to rescind job offers or close open positions, is where I think or see my company headed going to be good for my career?
Mm.
And so you've got to stay one step ahead and say, you know, if they outsource my department tomorrow, the next question is, what do I want to do next? Do I want to do more of the same, or do I want to go in a slightly or completely different direction? So start to go there. There's this temptation that when we think there's going to be a layoff, we bury our head in the sand and hope that they'll forget we work there and it'll pass us by. But that is just foolish, and it's just human nature. So you always have to be prepared to stay, be prepared to go. And the biggest part of being prepared to go is resume, LinkedIn profile, and a clear vision of what you'd like to do next, and go one step further and say, what other organizations would I like to work for? You have to start imagining that you've been laid off and start following a process to get your tools in order and be ready to, after you have that done, be ready to get out there and start connecting with people. The old networking, you know, that we all love to hate. So start doing it now. It doesn't mean you have to leave,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, it's true. And Julie, I am curious just for my own reference, really, LinkedIn is like a game changer. You have to be up to date on LinkedIn.
Absolute game changer. Yes,
it is.
Yeah, I know.
I don't touch LinkedIn. I should though. I have one,
yes.
But I don't think I've touched that in 5 years.
Yeah.
Oh man.
So think about it. You know, back in, it's a way to be found.
True.
When you have an active, up to date LinkedIn profile, recruiters and internal and external recruiters go out. And they are doing key. They pay for a very robust version of LinkedIn, and they can go out and do keyword searches and find you. So if you just have, you know, a picture and a job title, you know, you might as well not be there. But yeah, LinkedIn is absolutely a game changer.
All right, guys. So you gotta if you're
You're
like me, I gotta fix it. So you know what, Julie? As soon as I get off the show, that's like the first thing I'm gonna do. Once I do the podcast,
I'll help you. Let me know.
I will. Good morning, Julie Bauke is here. She's our career strategist, and we were talking just before about layoffs. If you look at a lot of business news across the country, layoffs, unfortunately, are sweeping American businesses this year. Peloton, for example, has laid off thousands of employees just this year alone. A real estate firm, RE/MAX, has slashed 17% of its workforce. So we were talking a little bit about making sure you are ready in case a layoff is to happen. I wanted to switch gears a little bit with you, Julie, because I think this is another term I've been hearing about in the last year, really since COVID, but certainly in the last year in a lot of news headlines. The term quiet quitting. For people who have never heard about it, what does that mean?
So it's a kind of a misleading title, like a lot of things that catch fire are. It sounds like quitting on the job, I'm just going to sit there and, you know, mess around on Facebook and buy stuff.
It sounds like
on
you're
Amazon
sneaking
and,
out of your job, right? Without telling them. Yeah.
Right. That's what it sounds like. Like maybe someday they'll notice I'm not there. But what it really is boundary setting. It's doing your job, doing it well, but setting boundaries about what you won't do outside of work, what you won't do outside of really what is required to do your job well. So, for instance, if you've got four people in your department and two of them have quit and the organization hasn't been able to replace them, then you've got two people doing the jobs of four. And what happens is if you still get the work done, regardless of the effect on your health, your relationships, how much time you're working, managers have been kind of like, okay, then you're good. And allowed you to keep doing two jobs because then they don't have to go out and find somebody and the work still gets done. And there's been this, and it usually pops its head up during times when layoffs are threatened. This, well, if you don't do this work, I guess I have to find somebody who will. So sort of that threat of if you don't do two jobs or a job and a half, then
you're not worthy,
you know,
anymore.
You're putting right. And I think that has been a scam for a very long time. We all have to put in more than more than maybe we think we should from time to time. But if you're getting a steady diet of way more than you've signed up for, way more than was ever expected of you, and you literally are working, you know, 60 hours a week, I think it's time to set some boundaries and have the courage to do that. And
how do employers
that is
feel
having
about
something
that,
else set up.
Like, how do they feel about that, though? So, like, let's say you're doing, like you said, you and I talked about this actually the last time you came on, Julie. So, you know, like, I had a friend who's a social worker, and all of a sudden the office of five went to an office of three, and she's taking on two or three people's roles. Like, what happens? You go to your employer and you're like, listen, I'm burned out. I'm doing too many people's jobs. I need to pull back a little bit so that my work is at the quality level it should be at and that our customers are being taken care of correctly. I can't fulfill a second or third person's job. Does, you know, do employers come back and go, well, then I'll find someone else who can do it? Are they open to it? Like, what do you find in your professional opinion people say to the idea of like a quiet quitting situation?
Well, I think sometimes we give managers or leaders, we think they know everything about what's going on, and they don't. But they're people too, and they're trying to do their own jobs and keep their boss happy. And so the first thing you have to do is make the person you're reporting to aware, and not do it in a whiny way. I mean, just say, you know, I don't know if you're aware, in order to manage this caseload or in order to get this work done, I am working 60 hours a week and then, you know, 10 hours on the weekend. It's not sustainable, and I can't do the highest quality work. Let's talk about how do we come up with a plan? What's the time frame here? What can I offload? What are some of the things that I love to do that I can do more of to kind of raise my overall work mood? And, you know, what are some things we can maybe let, you know, that go for a period of time? And so you want to take it on at least upfront with the attitude of collaboration. And I know you don't want me having a heart attack on the job or working 75 hours a week. And not only I don't believe you want me to, but I'm not willing to do that. And I think part of so much of this is taking a stand for yourself. And if you get anything back that smacks of suck it up, you know, and keep doing it, you know, I'm sure we can find somebody else to do it, then you really need to start
looking for somewhere else to work.
Constructing a job search. You do, because you can't, it's not sustainable. And we get afraid to do, you know, to look for something else. We you know, and sometimes employers kind of do the, oh, well, you're not loyal. I mean, that is a bunch of BS. You know, your loyalty, you have to be loyal to yourself first. And if your health is suffering, your relationships are suffering, and there's no end in sight, either you put an end to it by finding something better and having the courage to do so, or your body's going to shut down, or your spouse or partner's going to leave you, or your kids aren't going to know you. I mean, there's a ripple effect there, and you have to be the one to set those boundaries. Don't expect anybody else to do it for you.
Now, last question, Julie, for people who are intimidated to pull back a little bit, one of the biggest reasons is because they've done it for so long. So if their role shifted, let's just say during the pandemic, they've now been going strong at doing two or three people's jobs for the last 3-4 years or maybe even before that. So to come at your managers and say, hey, I don't think I can handle this anymore. Or I think, you know, this is suffering or this is, you know, going downhill. Wouldn't you think that's sort of a like that's hard to say, you know, hey, I can't do it anymore at this pace when you've already proven you can for a long time.
Right. But, you know, I think the first statement in that conversation is I've been doing two people's jobs for 2+ years. We need to talk about this. I mean, you need to state the facts. You know, I have been working 75 hours a week for the last 2 years, and I don't see an end in sight. This is not sustainable. You know, you're not a machine. You know, just because you've been doing it for 2+ years doesn't mean it's right and that you need to keep doing it. Sure, maybe you've been doing it and you've been keeping the place from falling apart, but that doesn't mean it has to continue. It also doesn't mean that it's right. And so what's your plan? You know, I'd say to somebody sitting across from me, I've been doing two people's jobs for 3 years. There's no end in sight. I say, okay, what's your plan? Well, you're either hoping the company is going to recognize it. Good luck with that. Or you have to put a stake in the ground and say, here's what I've been doing. I know you've been busy too. I know we've all been busy. But I'm here to tell you, this is not sustainable. And good bosses, and I know there's not that many, unfortunately, would understand that that is, you know, a cry for a change of some sort, and that if you don't get a change, you're going to quit. So not only are they not going to have you doing two jobs, they're not even going to have you doing one job anymore. Don't go in and threaten, you know, I'm out of here. But if you go in and you raise this to your boss and they give you the suck it up buttercup kind of thing, you know, attitude, and you can see it's not going to get any better, you absolutely owe it to yourself, your family, your future, your health, all of that, to start putting together a strategy to find something else.
And that's why we had people like Julie Bauke on the show to help us with these really big decisions and also help us navigate when things aren't as perfect as we'd like them to be in the workplace. So, Julie, I appreciate you coming on, and I look forward to talking to you again really soon.
All right. Thanks, Melissa. Take care.
Thank you. You too. Julie Bauke, who is our career strategist right here on WICC. Welcoming to the show for the first time, Rob Hodling. Rob is a hands-on tech and business leader with extensive experience of over 20 years in bringing people together and finding effective solutions to difficult problems. You can learn a lot more about Rob, not only here on WICC, but on his website, which is his name spelled out, roberthodling.com. And Rob is the independent candidate running for governor here in Connecticut. Good morning, Rob. Thank you for coming on the show.
Thanks, Melissa. Thanks for having me.
So, Rob, you know, introduce yourself to our listeners. I don't know much about you. Would love to learn more.
Oh, yeah, sure. Thank you. Well, again, Rob Hodling. I'm a 25-year resident of Connecticut. I came to the state to attend UConn. Just love it here. The beaches educational system. Met my wife at UConn and haven't left. I'm, as you mentioned, 20 years across numerous industries, from finance to food automation to casino gaming, physical security. I founded a gunshot detection company that could have addressed the lives of students at Uvalde, actually, recently. And I'm just really excited to be a different choice for voters come November 8th.
So how do you go from tech and business to politics? I know our current governor was really a businessman who sort of did something similar where he went into politics and he found success. He became our governor. What sort of drew you to the political field?
Well, I've actually been part of politics not as a candidate, from a campaign perspective. I've volunteered on several campaigns in the past, most notably Dan Malloy's first winning campaign. I worked on data and strategy, actually part of the Young Dems in my 20s, where I would load up voter lists and run some queries and say, you know, I think we should spend our time, money, and resources over here or there. I think in my own little way I helped. But then from a corporate perspective, very quickly, you know, you have to solve a lot of problems, and anything can happen at any point in any day, and you're held highly accountable, and you need to get a resolution pretty fast. Otherwise, your customers, your constituents will let you know, and you have to be highly accountable and transparent to do that.
Mm-hmm. So if you were to come across something like a pandemic, like I don't think in any realm of possibility, Governor Lamont or anyone who came into office right before the pandemic, I don't think anyone really knew what was going to hit them. So how would you have handled it? Do you think that Governor Lamont did a good job? Do you think there were things that he could have improved upon?
I think he did a reasonable job. You know, he had to make the decisions given the data that was given to him at the time. But again, for me, I'm driven by the data. Yeah, I think one thing that was proven was lockdowns weren't the best idea. It's negatively hurt Connecticut overall. But from the other perspectives with, you know, masks and promoting vaccinations and all that, I think those are all very good ideas. So basically, I think that there's some things I would have done differently. Definitely not lockdown. I would have considered different types of data and consulted the different types of experts to make sure that we have the best of both worlds in terms of health protection for our residents, as well as not negatively impacting our state.
Rob Hodling is here. He's the independent candidate running for governor here in Connecticut. And I wanted to really talk about that actually for a quick second, if you don't mind, Rob, the independent candidate. So do you affiliate or have you affiliated with a past party?
Yes, I've been part of both the Democratic and Republican parties.
Really?
I left for both, you know, for various reasons, but I've been part of both parties, which means as an independent, I can understand Right now, I think the reason why people are an independent, I ask the listeners out there, if you are an independent, why have you decided to become one? It's because we just don't want choice only between the Democrats or Republicans, only between Governor Lamont and Bob Stefanowski. We want a third choice. We want a third lane. So our campaign and our party represents a moderate middle lane where we could move everyone forward in terms of some of the hard decisions.
I'm curious, Rob, do you feel like we are seeing a shift? You know, I would say politically we're seeing a shift where you're right. There's I kind of call it the Republican Party, the Democratic Party, and then the unaffiliated. The people who are sort of the majority of Connecticut who are like, I just want to know the facts and figures. I just want to pick someone who's going to make sense. And in the past, I think sometimes people confuse unaffiliated and independent. They could be one and the same. It depends on people's definition of it. But essentially, it sounds like you are targeting like the unaffiliated, the people who don't want a party to define who they are. They just want to pick someone who's going to do the right, do right by them.
Yeah. I would equate the two as the same mindset. You're unaffiliated or you're independent for a reason. Really, it means you're not part of the two major parties. But the difference between unaffiliated and independent party is you actually get party benefits. If you're unaffiliated right now, you can't vote in any primary. We really need electoral reform, right? The taxpayers pay for the primaries of Republicans and Democrats. But then if you're unaffiliated, and the majority of voters, as you indicated, Melissa, are actually unaffiliated, 950,000 plus, but you get no benefit. So I would think for anyone who's unaffiliated listening, check your registration status. And if you are unaffiliated, think about this. Joining the independent party gets you party benefits, which allows you to actually vote for a candidate like me or a competitor within the independent party, rather than some major party candidate trying to come in and take it from us. But I would seriously consider that we're actually a purple state because most of us are unaffiliated. We tend to vote for Democrats, right, as a state, but that's not the case. We really are unaffiliated.
We're chatting this morning with Rob Hodling, who is the independent candidate running for governor here in Connecticut. Rob, typically independent party candidates don't fare as the most popular, I think is the most fair way to say it. Are you worried about that, or do you feel like we're sort of changing the tides that a lot of people really don't want to just go with, okay, we'll go with the incumbent, or, all right, we're just going to change parties because we're not happy with the incumbent? Like, what do you think the chances are that people go the independent route?
Yeah, well, definitely polls show both at a national level and in Connecticut. I think the most recent polls show something like 64% of voters do not believe the two major parties are solving their problems, and they are looking for a third party. So that's really critical, right? So in terms of this, the other big, in fact, just on some recent major talk shows over the last weekend, typically jobs and economy still remain the number one issue. But one that's trending high is electoral reform. I think a lot of Americans now are starting to understand, definitely Connecticut residents are starting to understand, wow, we need more choice. We need more voter choice, not less choice, in order to increase competition, which in economic sense, but definitely in a political sense, works the same way. With more competition, more choice comes better outcomes. So I think this is going to be a difference. I think this is the first time where there's a serious third viable candidate like myself. I'm currently a bank executive. I'm responsible for billions of dollars of other people's money, not millions of my own. And so I think people look at us as a viable third option. And so we have our own plans to address jobs and business, electoral reform, school reform, cost of living. We just think we're better in execution.
What are some of the biggest things that if you were to become the next governor, what are some of the biggest things you would do while in office?
Well, going right to jobs and business first off the bat, right? Connecticut is near the bottom in the U.S. for business friendliness. So making things more efficient and friendly for business is our job number one, right? So we have a lopsided 86% service economy. We're looking to create a common sense plan to bring back those higher paying manufacturing and technology jobs that Connecticut was historically famous for, where every manufacturing tech business really creates a job, I should say, creates five additional jobs for every single worker. Next, on electoral reform, very quickly, Connecticut elections are won 95% of the time by incumbents. So those incumbents don't really have a strong, I really argue, no incentive to cross the aisle and find common ground. to solve problems, right? Instead, they're required to focus on raising money just to win the next election. So we pledge as agents of new thinking and real solutions to fix our problems. We would introduce in our first 100 days a ranked choice voting bill that would essentially offer more voter choice, new and better ideas, and eliminate things like taxpayer-funded closed primaries. We'd end partisan gerrymandering, and we'd lower the legal barriers thrown up to prevent serious independent candidates from being elected, like myself.
And really quick, you were already endorsed by the Independent Party of Connecticut, correct?
Yes, we've been endorsed by the State Central Committee as well as several town committees. So, but unfortunately, due to a flaw in the bylaws, it allows a major party candidate to come out. So again, I would ask any independent party member thinking of selling out, for example, to Bob Stefanowski, which is going on right now for our caucus later tonight at 7:30 in Guilford. Consider the reasons you became an independent. We need your vote. Otherwise, just stay home.
All right. Well, again, we are so glad that we got to just scratch the surface and learn a little more about Rob Hodling, who is the independent candidate running for governor here in Connecticut. And Rob, I would love to have you back on the show, especially as we continue to get closer and closer to the general election. And I thank you so much for your time this morning.
Really appreciate it, Melissa. Thank you so much.
All right. Rob Hodling here on WICC. Joining us this morning is first select woman in Fairfield, Brenda Kupchick. Good morning, Brenda. How are you?
Good morning, Melissa. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you so much for coming on. And I know I had a quick turnaround for you to come on, so you're a rock star. I appreciate it. So you're like a big deal in news publications across the country. Apparently, your tweets got a lot of attention. And this was back on primary day that they started to pick up some traction. What happened?
Well, like most people, right, I cut the cord to cable. So I use streaming now. And so for somebody who's been involved in public service a long time, I really like to watch election results. I like to see what's happening. Mm-hmm. And I was involved with the primary some candidates. And so I jumped on Twitter, and George Colley was doing this. It's called a Twitter space. I'd never seen anything like it before.
Yeah, I don't think I know what that is.
Well, it's new. I didn't know what it was either. So.
Look at you, schooling me. I have no idea. I've never even heard of this. Okay.
Yeah. So you open up an online conversation where he's speaking, and then if you want to listen, you just jump on and you can listen and you can interact by tweeting back. And so he was reading the results online, saying who was doing what their numbers were as they were coming in. And actually, there was quite a few people tuned into it. And so people were tweeting back, you know, what's happening with this, what's happening with that, or giving their commentary. And I don't think it was any secret. I was very supportive of Themis Claridis. I worked with her in the legislature for 10 years. Mm-hmm. I saw how hard she worked and how she was effective. So I was disappointed that she lost. And I was particularly disappointed because I felt like it had something to do with the Trump endorsement. That
for Leora Levy,
correct. And so I just felt like you know, our party sort of rejected someone who has been a hard worker, someone who has fought for principles that I agree with and that most I would say Republicans agree with. And I just felt like it wasn't a good night for what I would say our party.
So one of the tweets here that I see is quoted here, and this is from Brenda Kupchick's Twitter page. It says, if a leader like Themis Claridis, who has stood up for fiscal responsibility and fought for good governance for years, loses a primary, the Connecticut Republican Party is in crisis. Why'd you say that?
Well, because I just felt like I feel like a lot of sort of moderate Republicans in Connecticut that the party is, you know, listen, both parties have these issues. It's not exclusive to the Republican Party. There is breaks in all parties. There's, you know, extremists or, you know, they'll say left wing, they'll say right wing. I tend to, obviously, grown up in Connecticut, been a Republican my whole life, really ascribe to more, you know, the Reagan sort of Republicans. That's why I signed up to be a Republican when I was in high school. And I just feel that there's been a real division, and it's been very hurtful. I feel like our party continually chooses people who don't have a track record of public service and ultimately aren't competitive in general elections. And so I think that's what I was trying to convey, and apparently it wasn't. Some people appreciated it, some people didn't. I guess that's life, right?
Yeah, that's certainly absolutely. That's the world we're living in, no question. Brenda Kupchick, who is the first elect woman in Fairfield and a proud member of the Republican Party here in Connecticut, that's totally life, and it's so unacceptable. I mean, even just working in media, I can't tell you the amount of nasty comments I get on a weekly basis. It's just ridiculous, but unnecessary completely. It's interesting because I think people who are either unaffiliated or who are, like you said, moderate Republicans or even moderate Democrats, I'm going to throw them in the mix too. I think you said what I think a lot of people are feeling but don't know how to say it out loud. Now, when I say that, I'm not saying that Leora Levy couldn't do a good job in office. I'm not saying that. I don't actually particularly know an awful lot about her, which is why I'm going to have her on the show next week. But with that being said, as you mentioned, Themis Claridis was probably the best bet projected by any political expert here in Connecticut. It was probably the best bet to take out Blumenthal from his seat. And now that has sort of become where, if you're an unaffiliated voter, you were debating going with Themis Claridis. And I've heard from many since primary, they're just going to go with Blumenthal because it really became, somebody who embodied, like you mentioned, I don't want to call him a character, but like a person who really is so controversial. And I mean, some have described if you're a Trump follower, or you're somebody who loves Donald Trump, then that's like you kind of drank the Kool-Aid. And it's, that's what it's been described as publicly. But I think what your tweets were doing was saying what I it sounds like a lot of people are feeling, honestly, after primary election.
Right. And I just think that all elections should be competitive, right? I think that the voters should have solid choices to choose from. And frankly, listen, as you said, I'm a proud Republican. I'm somebody who has been a member of the Republican Party for a long time. Now, listen, all Republicans, don't walk the same line or think the same things.
Of course.
And that's the same thing with the Democrat Party. There's, it's a big tent. Everybody has different ideas and different principles. But generally, right, there are some principles more towards fiscal, I would say, were principles that I, stood side by side with Themis Claridis and others fighting for sound fiscal policy for our state. One in which being where we were able to pass the first bipartisan budget in the history of Connecticut. When I was serving with them as the leader. And so that made a real difference. And that's, that you can look to as the governor talks now about the surpluses we're enjoying was because you saw a balanced government, compromising and working together. So the Republicans got some fiscal pieces into the budget that they really wanted to buy in. And then there was a bipartisan budget. So I think the bottom line is the average everyday citizen wants to have competitive elections. We haven't had an elected Republican representing the state of Connecticut since Chris Shays lost his election in 2008.
Right.
Is that a good thing for the state of Connecticut? I don't know. I think that there should be balance in all states. And so I think that's just part of what I was, I was disappointed about.
Mm-hmm.
Not so much. I just think that we need to have more competitive races, and it doesn't appear that my party is choosing the candidates who can win statewide, or choosing enough of them. Let's just say.
We are chatting this morning with First Elect Woman Brenda Kupchick out of Fairfield, and we're talking about the aftermath of the primary election, and now as we are journeying to the general election in November, there's been a lot of controversy and conversation about the future of the parties here in Connecticut, specifically the Republican Party. And Brenda, you're not the first one to talk about it. There have been many other politicians and just regular everyday people who have talked about what the future looks like. What do you think, though? I mean, I think we're going to get, if I were to make a professional guess on what's going to happen, because I was actually having this conversation with Lisa Wexler the other day, my predictions, if you will, and look, I'm no politician, so who am I? But if I were to predict, I would imagine we're really not going to see much change with Republican leaders taking over. I think our closest race right now will be Jahana Hayes versus George Logan. I think that's your closest race at this point. If Themis Claridis had won, I think Themis Claridis would have given Senator Blumenthal a run for his money. But now I don't know how that race could really end up. So how long do you think we basically go until we potentially see a Republican representing Connecticut in Washington, D.C.? Because you're right. I feel the same way. How can you have a state really equally represented in Washington when you only have one party talking, essentially?
Right. And I think therein lies the problem. So, listen, I don't think this is rocket science. I think that you just look at the data and the history of what candidates are pushed forward through our convention and primary system on the Republican side, and are they winning races? That's all. It's very simple to me. And they're not.
So, well, I know you've been very outward about the fact that you don't like the conventions. You don't even really like the primaries.
No, I think the conventions are just a party, like a sort of event. I don't know that they're helpful. And I think there's other Republicans who feel the same way. I don't think we need a convention system. I think we should have candidates go right to primary and let the voters decide. But I think the most crucial thing I think the Republican Party can do to be more competitive is to open up our primary system to allow unaffiliated voters to vote in it. Because the registered Republicans have very low numbers in Connecticut. So really you're not getting a full sort of breadth of the voters statewide. And other states do that. New Hampshire does that. And other states allow unaffiliated voters to vote in primaries because those people are going to be the ones voting in the general election as well. And they are the biggest block of voters in most states, and especially in Connecticut. So why not have them get engaged early, learn and be part of the process, learn about candidates and be part of the process, and have a vote and a choice in who would be running on the ballot in November. And I think that you'd get a more balanced result overall for the state of Connecticut.
I know it's something, in speaking to Bob Stefanowski, he said he wants that. He would love open primaries going forward. I haven't gotten a clear, concise answer from Governor Lamont. I'll ask him about it again when he's on next. But, you know, Connecticut's never had open primaries, as far as my understanding goes. What do you think about split ticket voting? Because that's another thing that people have talked about is, you know, for example, let's take the Republican governor's race or the governor's race, rather, and let's take the Republican ticket. Some people have said, you know, we're not impressed with Bob Stefanowski, for example, but we really like Laura Devlin. And unfortunately, we have to vote for them together. So we're going to go with Lamont. What do you think about the idea of doing split ticket voting?
Well, I think that's an interesting concept. I haven't heard much conversation about it. Obviously, I think a governor should be able to choose their lieutenant governor because it's somebody that they're going to be working closely with. So, I mean, listen, I guess we could have more discussion about it. I always like to learn. I never want to have a closed mind about anything until I hear all sides of an issue. But obviously, I think that the voters should be able to choose. But then again, if you're the governor, you know, don't you want to be able to pick the person who's going to be your sort of right hand, as opposed to having someone thrust upon you that you may not necessarily want?
That makes sense. So not even really electing a lieutenant governor, it's something that the governor should potentially be able to pick on his or her own.
Yeah, I mean, we had these discussions back when the Republicans were having, you know, when we had conventions where there was a number of people running for lieutenant governor. And then the gubernatorial candidate sort of had to just take whoever the party chose for them as opposed to the person they wanted. So I'm not sure that's the greatest thing. This is the first time, I think, where, at least if I can remember, where Bob Stefanowski just picked Laura and everyone got behind that ticket, as opposed to a bunch of people trying to run to be the lieutenant
governor. I noticed that, too. I thought that was really interesting, too. That's funny you mentioned that, because it was never really talked about in the news either. But I thought, wow, that's really, it was really just like, all right, this is who I picked. And that was the end of it. There was no, voting. There was nothing. There was no controversy or anything.
Yeah. Challenge. So actually, I think that's better. I think if, you know, if the party, whichever party it is, chooses their gubernatorial candidate, that's who they want, then I think they should be able to choose their lieutenant governor, should run as a ticket. But I definitely 100% think we need to open the primaries up. We just, I think on both sides, I think you get too much polarization on both sides. And I think unaffiliated voters, if they choose, can vote to choose who's going to be on the ballot. I really don't understand why this is so controversial. To me, it makes sense.
Yeah, I agree. Well, Brenda, I appreciate you coming on and talking about this in length. And I know you'll be back on before you know it. Thank you so much for your time.
All right. You have a good day.
Thank you. You too. That's Brenda Kopchick, the first Select Woman of Fairfield, right here on WICC.